curious and passionate and love to learn and want to make a difference. And it was just those descriptors I felt fit me and got me really excited about it. I just jumped in and tried it.
Bonjour, hello, welcome to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. I'm your host, Leah Lem.
And I'm your other host, Cole Primo. Miigwech for joining us today. Native Lights is more than a podcast and radio show. At its core, it's a place for Native folks to tell their stories. Each and every week, we have captivating conversations with great guests from a whole lot of different backgrounds. We're talking musicians, artists, healthcare advocates, language warriors, historians, you name it. They have a wonderful mix of passions. And we talk to them about their gifts and how they share those gifts with their community. And it all centers around the big point of purpose in our lives. And here we go, amplifying Native voices. How you doing, Leah?
I'm well. How are you?
Just got done shoveling the driveway, so I was huffing and puffing not but 15 or 20 minutes ago. So catching my breath.
Good.
It's a little sore, just a little bit. How you doing?
I'm good. So I am in the middle of trying to redesign my office.
Ooh.
Right now, it's like guest rooms / office corner. And I need to make it into something a little more fun because it's the basement. It's got limited light. And do you want to hear my inspiration for my upcoming design?
Yes. Let's hear it.
How about I let you guess? And it is a character that you know I like.
Okay. I would immediately think like Gandalf or something like that.
Yes. I want a wizard office.
Classic.
I thought you would get it. That's why I went that direction.
Very nice.
I want an office fit for a wizard.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, books on books, nice desk. I want to have a dedicated screen that will play like a fireplace.
Nice.
And cozy chair. Right now I sit on an ottoman. But yeah, like a cozy chair and maps on the walls, maybe some starry wallpaper. So you never know, maybe in the next couple of weeks, you might be chatting to me here from my wizard office lair.
Get like a fog machine and just pump up the vibes. Put dust on all the scrolls.
There'll be no electricity. I'll just be sitting by candlelight with like loose leaf paper.
Love it. Love it. Can't wait to see it. Yeah.
So that's what I'm up to.
You got to take some pics and throw that on the social medias. Get some engagement on that.
Yes, that's right. That's how I am.
Because if you don't put it on social media, it doesn't exist. So there you go.
That's right.
Just kidding.
Well, I'm very excited for
my
future new office, but not as excited as I am right now to chat with today's guest.
Mm-hmm.
Today's guest is Maddie Harper DiCarlo, and I've been meaning to talk with Maddie for a while now, so I'm really glad that she agreed to come on our program here. Maddie's a citizen of the Boys Fort Band of Ojibwe, and she currently works in philanthropy as the grant-making officer at the Bush Foundation. She's also worked in tribal-state relations, education, and as a historian. And Maddie lives with her family in Stillwater, of all places. We've had a couple Stillwaters in a row here. So I'm really looking forward to this conversation. Bonjour, Maddie.
Hi. Hey, bonjour.
All righty. Bonjour, Maddie. Could you just start by introducing yourself, telling us a little bit of background, where you're joining us from, all that good stuff?
So my name is Maddie Harper DiCarlo, and I grew up at the Leech Lake Reservation, born and raised in Cass Lake. I live in Stillwater, and yeah, I'm a citizen of the Boys Fort Band of Ojibwe.
We always like to ask, you know, how are you doing? How's the family?
Great. It's a snow day today, and so we've all been inside the house. Kids are a little bit restless, been doing a little work, but yeah, everybody's doing well. Everybody's healthy. I have a 4-year-old son. He's in preschool. He's super lively and crazy. And then I have a 10-year-old daughter who goes to the Stillwater School District, and she missed seeing her friends today. But yeah, it's nice. My parents live nearby. Actually, they moved down from Cass Lake. And then I have two sisters who both work in education and Native American education. So they live close by too.
So Maddie, every time we sit down with a guest, we like to kick off our conversations with a question about what you're thinking about or concentrating on these days.
So I've been doing work recently with Indigenous language revitalization activists. And so part of that work in trying to develop some partnerships and move some funding and investments into the field has been looking at the field and seeing how has the field grown in the past 20 years and what has been sort of the investment. And there's from the federal government, there's from tribal governments, but then there's also considering what has private foundations, even corporate foundations, what have foundations put into it, and looking specifically, because I'm Ojibwe, what about Ojibwe language revitalization? It's just surprising to me, not to the people, the activists who have been in the field, but just how under-resourced it's been. And while the field as a whole, like the people working in it, have just grown and evolved over the past 20 years, you know, and the field has grown, investment in it hasn't. And so, you know, thinking about how can I, in my position within the Bush Foundation, educate not just the Bush Foundation and get more investments out, but also other foundations and influence foundations and kind of help shed light on why this is worthy to invest in, because I feel like people working in the field haven't been given a fair chance, you know, to actually do the work.
Gotcha. So you're a grant-making officer with the Bush Foundation, focusing on 23 Native nations within Bush's region, grant-making region. That's quite a few nations.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And so can you say a little bit more, perhaps, about your role and how you actually work with so many tribal nations?
So my position there, I'm a grant-making officer with a focus on Native nations and community. So this is a new position that was created in 2021. Previously, it was just grant-making officers, no kind of focus, but now we have two others that have a focus. One focuses on North Dakota and one on South Dakota. So I came in with experience doing kind of intergovernmental work coming from the governor's office and working with tribal nations, but then also my deeper knowledge of specifically Minnesota and even just nationwide from being a Native American studies professor and doing a lot of my research focused on the region helps to inform a lot of the work, because a lot of the work that we want to fund, it's difficult to understand the significance of it or the potential that the impact can have if you don't understand the whole history of colonization and context that created the problem. So I'm helping to do education within the Bush Foundation to help give context to a lot of the grants so staff can really understand the significance of the work that community is doing. And then also hopefully this year, I want to pivot more to doing more external education and trying to influence the field more. So my position is, you know, of course, I review grant applications that come in. We have several that I'm usually looking at, but one of our largest doors is the Community Innovation Grant Program, and this is open on a rolling basis. Anyone can apply at any time. It's really flexible. It's not limited to one topic. So I review those, but also a big part of my job is to do what we call sourcing. So it's to try to go out there and connect with people, go to communities and find people who have these big ideas. A lot of people aren't aware of the Bush Foundation, right? Or of these specific grant opportunities. And so when I started, you know, at Bush, coming in as an Ojibwe woman who worked with a lot of Ojibwe tribal governments. I mean, I worked with the Dakota ones as well, too, but I really noticed that a lot of our funding was going to Lakota and Dakota nonprofits, nations. And it was just a result of the history of our relationships, maybe because of the staff, their relationships, kind of their community ties, things like that. And so last year I set as one of my goals was that I wanted to really source in Ojibwe communities. So I went out and I met people, you know, I talked to Gimme One, Burnett. I know he was a guest on here, you know, worked with him for like 8 or 9 months, just kind of helping him talk through his ideas and kind of solidify something that would be like an investment at the scale that the Bush Foundation wants to make. And so, you know, after talking, they were awarded $8.2 million grant just in this past year, you know, kind of a historic investment for the field. So yes, yeah, so my job is, you know, going out there, connecting with people, and then trying to, it's almost like coaching, you know, coaching people to kind of think bigger and bigger. Like when I first talked to Gimme One, for example, I think he wanted, you know, a much smaller scale. And we talked and I kept getting him to think bigger and bigger and bigger. And so it's like, we try to, you know, encourage people to think about like, what's your biggest vision? And then to really submit for that.
You're listening to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. Native Lights is produced by Minnesota Native News and Ampers with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Today, we're speaking with Dr. Maddie Harper DiCarlo, Boys Fort Band of Ojibwe citizen. Maddie works in philanthropy as a grant-making officer at the Bush Foundation. Could you talk about the Bush Foundation, what it does, its goals, and then maybe what drew you to the Bush Foundation?
So it's a private foundation that was established. I think there have only been four presidents. We were just saying this the other day at work. Four presidents in the history of the foundation. We have an amazing leader now. Jennifer Ford Reedy leads Bush as a president, and her leadership, I give a lot of credit to it. She's just really supportive of investments in Indian country, like has been really supportive of my position. We have a really great fellows program, Bush Fellowship program. So I know a lot of, you know, Native people have heard of the fellowship, or they know people who are fellows. So we're kind of more well known for that. When I'm out and about, I might get questions about that, but then I try to kind of let people know about our other grant opportunities. A lot of it is funding for nonprofits. Really, our biggest grant program, the Community Innovation Grant Program, we're looking for ideas that are innovative, of course, and that have the potential for big impact, and not just on your immediate community, but to really transform a field. So it might have the potential to be adapted to other communities or nationwide, something like that, but that there would be a big learning and teaching element to it. So what drew me to it, it was like, I had never thought about philanthropy before I had this job. I've been in the position about 3.5 years now. And I actually come from academia, and then I left academia for public history, and then I ended up in state government for a little bit. You know, there's like one thread that goes through all of those jobs, and that was finding my role in impacting Native communities. You know, it's, and really specifically Ojibwe. I grew up at Leech Lake. I'm a descendant of Leech Lake and White Earth and Boys Fort. And as my cousin Lori was just telling me the other day, also Grand Portage, we've just found, you know, I want to be helpful. How can I kind of serve my people? So wanting to like have a life of service. And I feel like I was like searching for that for a long time, but that I just needed this period of like being out and learning. I lived in Europe for a few years after college, and I was in California for 10 years. So I was away from home for a long time, but I felt like finally at this one point, I felt like I had enough, maybe knowledge or skills, or maybe it was just like confidence, but to come back home and like play some sort of a role. So teaching wasn't my thing. You know, being a professor, I loved doing research, I loved writing, but I just didn't have that passion for teaching that I hear so many people talk about. Public history, I thought, well, maybe I can help change like the dominant narrative of moving away from history that emphasizes Europeans and kind of this white supremacist history to bringing in marginalized Native history and kind of centering it, that maybe that'll make a difference. And that was, you know, a great learning experience. But, you know, I was at an institution where it was just really frustrating with the politics. And then state government. I thought, okay, now I can directly work with tribal governments and play a role. But it was like, I was still in all of these positions. I was kind of the outsider. I would approach Native communities and I was kind of like representing this colonial institution, right? Where they would say, oh, now you're coming from the Minnesota Hysterical Society, I heard. Like when I went to Mille Lacs, some people said that, or coming, you know, from the state government, there was like trust that had to be established or distrust that had to be overcome. And when this job at the Bush Foundation came up, I still had no idea what the work would entail, but the job description said, we're looking for people who are curious and passionate and love to learn and want to make a difference. And it was just those descriptors I felt fit me and got me really excited about it. I just jumped in and tried it. And, you know, it's been like a steep learning curve learning about philanthropy, but it's just been really refreshing to actually be in a job where I'm part of an institution where I meet people and there's not this like huge guard up instantly. The Bush Foundation has more, you know, friendly social capital, I feel like in Indian country than some of the other institutions I've worked for. It's been fun because I still get to do research. I still get to learn about all these different issues as I'm doing due diligence on grant applications. And I get to talk to a lot of people and interview people and kind of like make an argument, and then channeling money to people just feels like a really solid material way to contribute.
How do you measure then the impact from the funds or the funding? Do you do that too on the other side after the funds go out?
Yeah, part of the due diligence that we conduct is determining what sort of impact are they projecting or hoping for. They usually would state what kind of outcomes they're hoping for. But then, yes, once we make those grants, there's also this important period of holding like this grantee relationship. And so it's making sure we don't just kind of, you know, give the money and then we're out of here. We really care about the work. It's like attending events and having regular annual check-in calls, but oftentimes it can be more than that just because of there can be, you know, more organic relationship that comes from doing some of the work. I like to act as a sounding board a lot of times to grantees, you know, if they might be struggling with something or something comes up, or a lot of times there are just unforeseen things that you can't anticipate. And so we're there to sort of track. They always have evaluation built into their grant as well. It's one thing Bush does is once we make the grant, we also add to that 5% of whatever the award is just for evaluation and learning. And we're there to kind of support them. We have a learning and evaluation team that talks with them about how would you like to spend this money for eval and learning. It's really up to them, but how would they like to find ways to measure their work?
What do you see as kind of the big challenges when it comes to granting money?
Gosh, for doing grants to, you know, Indian country or to Native-led nonprofits, one of the biggest challenges is providing kind of the context. At Bush, we have a larger grant-making team of about 10 to 12 people. And so when a grant comes in from an organization, say it's based on, could be Native food sovereignty or a language application. So my job is, after I do the due diligence, I have to present it to the grant making committee and I have to provide things like, what is the context to this? So always with any Native work, there's something about colonization where it's like, of course we need to do language revitalization work because of this history of boarding schools, right? Or food sovereignty work, you talk about like the reservation system, or healthcare, you talk about the Indian Health Service. Like it always comes back to colonization, colonialism, the legacies, and that, you know, our communities are still grappling with these legacies and trying to find solutions to that. And so our team internally really needs to understand why this is exciting. Like, there was a grant to the North Dakota Native Tourism Alliance in North Dakota, and all the Native nations there came together to kind of create a tourism group. They're designing their own tours for Standing Rock or for Turtle Mountain. And so, you know, at first people thought, well, so exciting about that. What's so innovative? And so part of my work was to bring in, well, historically, there's this history of non-Native people or white people in the state having these tours or just benefiting from the tourism industry and kind of exploiting Native images and Native imagery and Native people not benefiting from that. And plus, what kind of stories are told in that tourism? And so for all these Native nations to come together and collaborate and to be designing their own work for both national and international tourists, they're like really taking control of narratives, like owning their own storytelling. And that's something that's really reversing a really long history of colonialism. So that's one aspect of it. So a lot of the work is just historicizing, providing context, doing field research, and just providing kind of that analysis of why the work in Indian country is important.
You're listening to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. Native Lights is produced by Minnesota Native News and Ampers with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Today we're speaking with Maddie Harper DiCarlo, PhD, Boys Fort Band of Ojibwe citizen. Maddie works in philanthropy as a grant-making officer at the Bush Foundation. Maddie, how do you get people to think big?
So here's the thing is that when it comes to grants, people are used to just asking for the minimum. Right? Like, what is the minimum? And they want to keep it down. So that's a big challenge. And so it's to sort of convince people that, like, I believe in their work. You know, it's asking a lot of questions, like finding out what is the work you're really doing? What changes do you want? Could you do that with just one staff? What about two staff? What about comms? What about support? What about wellness work? You know, and just to keep asking. I just keep asking questions, and people, you know, in the field, activists, they have been thinking about everything they need. I find a lot of people have this ongoing wish list. And so it's just a matter of eliciting it, much like your work, you know, like doing an interview or eliciting information and you're kind of like pulling it out of people. And when I've talked to grantees, you know, I've said like, thank you for all the work you put into this, and it's really exciting. And they've thanked me just for basically eliciting their ideas from them, pulling it, you know. And I think people have been told that they have to ask for the minimum. And kind of one hurdle to overcome too is there's a lot of, you know, nonprofits and tribal governments have experience working with federal funding. The application is onerous, but there's also like all of this reporting, and there's like a lot of burdensome pieces connected to it. And so, you know, I have to sort of like convince them that there's not the same burden associated with the Bush Foundation. Like, we don't require any written reports. It's sort of all check-ins, and it really depends on me like getting out there and meeting people one-on-one. Because people aren't going to come to us and share their ideas if I'm just kind of like emailing them and, you know, sending links to them.
So you talked previously about how providing for the community was like a theme throughout the various roles you've been in. Could we take a step back and just talk about where that comes from? Like, where does that drive come from and what fuels that as you go along?
That's a good question. Yeah, I think it like springs from my family, from growing up in Cass Lake, but also I think my experiences living far away and traveling a lot helped illuminate for me the specialness of where I came from and even just the beauty of Ojibwe community and people and my history. So my experience was really me going out, and it was by going out learning about myself and my community more that way. So after college, I got certified to teach English as a foreign language because I just had this huge drive to travel. And my idea was that I thought maybe for 10 years, I'm going to hop from country to country. I thought I would spend 1 year teaching English and just move around. And I ended up staying in the Czech Republic for a couple of years. And then I was in Spain and Barcelona. I lived in New York City for a while, getting a graduate degree, a master's in international affairs. And that was a really amazing experience. I spent some time at the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues and working with activists there from, you know, all over the world, Indigenous activists. And I could speak some Spanish by then. And so I was speaking to, that was kind of like the shared colonial language, you know, some Indigenous peoples from South America and Central America. And I was doing radio work then too for Democracy Now and this other volunteer show. And so I was like just recording people and learning so much and finding a shared identity in this broader Indigenous identity. And so then I ended up getting a doctorate in ethnic studies at UC Berkeley. I was just looking for a place where I could focus more on Native American studies. And I ended up as a tenure track professor at the University of California, San Diego. But my experience there was teaching Native American studies classes. And I was just definitely getting homesick by that point and having a hard time actually being able to come home for ceremony and things like that, and being away from ceremonial life and culture. And so when I heard about an opportunity at the Minnesota Historical Society for public history role, and I came back home, and it was like everything kind of was falling into place once I came back to Minnesota. And I've been moving around trying to find what is my role, or trying to find out what are my gifts, or how can I use my voice, or whatever skills and training I have. And I definitely feel like this role at the Bush Foundation, when I have my reviews from my supervisor, they are praising things that usually in other jobs, it was like causing conflict for me. It's like speaking up, arguing different points, different talents I have are finally being viewed as positive.
Dr. Maddie Harper DiCarlo.
That's right. Thinking big. Mm-hmm. I want to think about that. Asking more questions to help myself, help others think big. I think that's a really good lesson there.
Well, for me, I think of it as like Minnesota nice to ask for the minimum and not try to, you know, reach, you know.
The tallest flower gets plucked.
Something like that. Just think big is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Miigwech to our guest, Dr. Maddie Harper DiCarlo. I'm Cole Primo.
And I'm Leah Lem. Miigwech for listening. Gigawabamin.
Gigawabamin.
You're listening to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. Native Lights is produced by Minnesota Native News and AMPRS with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
Winter is here. Ramsey County winter warming spaces are open every night between 9 p.m. and 7 a.m. now through March. These spaces are available to anyone in need of a place to warm up overnight. If you or someone you know need a place to warm up overnight, call 651-266-1035 between 5 p.m. and 5 a.m. That's 651-266-1035. To find out more, visit ramseycounty.us/warming spaces.
KFAI is proud to present the Cafe Accordion Orchestra at the Dakota on Monday, January 13th. Dan Newton and the Cafe Accordion Orchestra brings to the Dakota an evening of dancing to the sounds of swing, ballads, tangos, cha-chas, rumbas, and cumbias to create a wonderfully varied show. The special performance will feature Prudence Johnson on lead vocals. Tickets for the Cafe Accordion Orchestra can be found at the Dakota website. Visit dakotacooks.com for more details.
Welcome to MN90, Minnesota history in 90 seconds.
Winter 1988. Three musicians with short punk hair, big city attitudes, and a half-finished album found themselves in Chanhassen, Minnesota. To these Londoners, Chanhassen felt like a snowy, remote corner of the earth. They were fine young cannibals a British pop band that had put out its first album in 1985 and nothing since. Their record label was getting nervous